So it's Canto 4, chapter 28, text 44. Chiravasa Vrata Shama Veni Bhuta Siro Ruha Babha Vupa Patim Shanta Sikha Shantam Ivanalam. Someone else? Translation. The daughter of King Vidarbha wore all garments, and she was lean and thin because of her vows of austerity. Since she did not arrange her hair, it became entangled and twisted in locks. Although she remained always near her husband, she was as silent and unagitated as the flames of an undisturbed fire. Purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. When one begins to burn firewood, there is smoke and agitation in the beginning. Although there are so many disturbances in the beginning, once the fire is completely set, the firewood burns steadily. Similarly, when both husband and wife follow the regulative principles of austerity, they remain silent and are not agitated by sex impulses. At such a time, both husband and wife are benefited spiritually. One can attain this stage of life by completely giving up a luxurious mode of life. In this verse, the word chiravasa refers to very old, torn garments. The wife especially should remain austere, not desiring luxurious dresses and living standards. She should accept only the bare necessities of life and minimize her eating and sleeping. There should be no question of mating. Simply by engaging in the service of her exalted husband, who must be a pure devotee, the wife will never be agitated by sex impulses. The vanaprastha stage is exactly like this. Although the wife remains with the husband, she undergoes severe austerities and penances, so that although both husband and wife live together, there is no question of sex. In this way, both husband and wife can live together perpetually. Since the wife is weaker than the husband, this weakness is expressed in this verse with the words upapatim. Upa means near to, or almost equal to. Being a man, the husband is generally more advanced than his wife. Nonetheless, the wife is expected to give up all luxurious habits. She should not even dress nicely or comb her hair. Hair combing is one of the main businesses of women. In the vanaprastha stage, the wife should not take care of her hair. Thus her hair will become tangled in knots. Consequently, the wife will no longer be attractive to the husband, and she herself will no longer be agitated by sex impulses. In this way, both husband and wife can advance in spiritual consciousness. This advanced stage is called the Paramahansa stage. And once it is obtained, both husband and wife can be actually liberated from bodily consciousness. If the disciple remains steady in the service of the spiritual master, he need no longer fear falling down into the clutches of Maya. So, regulatory processes, Vana Ashram Dham. Chatur Vanyam Maya Sistram Guna Kama Vibhaga Saha. So it's explaining again in these verses that we're reading through this particular chapter About royalty. So we have, what was it, King Malayad Vajja, and Vaidabhi, who was the daughter of a king. So also in that system, there would be marriage into the particular Kshatriya or Brahmana class or Vaishya class or Sudra class. In this particular case, we're talking about the Kshatriya class. And Kshatriya class of men are there to protect the society. They are the arms of the body. And they are governed by the Brahmin class. And of course, the Brahmin class, the Vaishnava Brahmanas. And they're also called sages. So the sages or the Vaishnava Brahmanas, they knew very well the purpose of life. And just like Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Bhoktaram Yagnata Pasham Savaloka Maheshwaram Suridam Sava Bhutanam Yatvamam Shantim Rachati. So it's explained by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita that the sages, knowing me as the ultimate purpose of all sacrifices and austerities, Bhoktaram Yagya Tapasham, Yagya, sacrifice, Tapas is austerity. Savaloka Maheshwaram. He is the well-wisher of all living entities. He is the Savaloka. It's all the planets. Maheshwara means all the demigods. Suridam Sava Bhutanam. He is the well-wisher of all living entities. And as a result, Shanti, peace. Bhoktaram Yagna Tapasham Savaloka Maheshwaram Suridam Sava Bhutanam Gyatvamam Shantim Rachati. So Arjuna was also Kshatriya class. He was the brother of very famous king Yudhisthira. And in this particular chapter, of course, Srimad Bhagavatam has no chronological order whatsoever. We jump from different yugas under different manvantara advatars. It is just explaining the wonderful pastimes of the Supreme Lord. Vede Rama Yane Cheva Parane Bharate Tata Odo Ante Tamadyacha Hari Sava Trajiyate. In the Vedas, Vede, Rama, in the Ramayana, Vede Rama, Yanai Chaiva, as well as Purana, Bharate, Tata, in the Puranas, Mahabharat, Ordo, Ante, in the beginning, Ordo, Ante, at the end, Madhyacha, also in the beginning, Hari Sava Trajiyate. Only the Supreme Personality of Godhead is mentioned. So that is the ultimate goal of life. Savai Pung Sang Paradamo Yato Bhakti Yadokshade. The supreme occupation, Param Dharma, supreme occupation, Dharma, is that by which we can attain service to the Transcendental Lord. So this is the ultimate goal of life in the human form. In other forms of life, we cannot attain to such heights. We have to have the human form of life. So Arjuna, he was also in the royal family. He was a Kshatriya, very, very powerful Kshatriya, over 7 feet tall, broad, strapping physique, very strong, subtle body, mind and intelligence, very, very strong. And he was called Tattvavit, Tattvavit tu Mahabaho, Gunakama Vibhagayo. And when we're talking about this particular slokan in Bhagavad Gita, it's not about Arjuna's physical prowess, tattvavit, he's mighty armed, tattvavit tu mahabaho, he is mighty armed, mahabaho, but with tattvavit, with knowledge. So not only is he physically very, very strong, very tall, very powerful, but he's also tattvavit, he's also fully armed with knowledge. Also, he has mystic powers. He's been endowed by Krishna. His Gandiva bow is not an ordinary bow. It is a special bow. So there's Arjuna. What a perplexity. Can you imagine yourself being in Arjuna's position? Being driven between two huge armies. And while he's in that position of being in between the two armies, he's gazing. He's gazing into the enemy's army. And he sees, not only in the enemy's army, but also his own army, many, many friends, family members. And he becomes perplexed, because Krishna is saying, you have to kill these people. So that was Arjuna's complexity. His devotional service to the Lord wasn't just to sit in the temple and chant Hare Krishna and follow regulative principles. Arjuna's position, after all other endeavors were exhausted, politically, diplomatically, so many endeavors were made to settle this conflict. But Duryodhana, he wouldn't give up. He would not give up the throne. So the only recourse was to have a big battle. And according to Srila Prabhupada in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the battle of Kurukshetra was the biggest battle within the last 6,000 years. And in that battle, over 640 million soldiers were killed. And many hundreds of thousands of soldiers just couldn't be found. So this is the position of the Vedic Kshatriya class of men. They are there to protect, but they are also very, very Krishna conscious, because they know the ultimate goal of life is to return back to home, back to Godhead. And that is their responsibility as administrators, administrating the whole world. In those days, there would be one king, only one king, one government, and that would be ruled. So Arjuna is saying to Krishna in Bhagavad Gita, because there's this dialogue, you know, there's this subjective dialogue going on between Krishna and Arjuna. And Arjuna is putting the questions that we all, as the common man, would want to know. And that question is, on this path of devotional service that you are talking about, dear Lord, what if after some time I do not complete my devotional service? Am I to be left like a riven cloud? What happens to me? And the Lord said, you will not be left as a riven cloud. But because a little advancement on this path of devotional service, can protect one from the dangerous type of fear. So what is that dangerous type of fear that Krishna is talking about? The most dangerous type of fear is that we return to the 8,400,000 different species of life. That is dangerous. And also those species of life, only 400,000, which is a very, very small ratio in compared to the other 8 million, is the human form. Hare Krishna. So this is the position. We come into the human form of life. Somehow or other, how do we get these human forms of life? Srila Prabhupada has mentioned many times that forget being a Vaishnava, Just to get a human form of life is very, very, very rare. Very rare. Brahmanda Brahmate Kona Bhagavan Jeev. Guru Krishna Prashade Pai Bhakti Lata Bij. So, somehow or other, while we're moving around the Brahmanda, and the Brahmanda that is mentioned in that verse, Brahmanda Brahmate, is Lord Brahma's creation. But it's not just one universe. There are many, many other universes. And Prabhupada mentions that if you take a mustard seed, a very small mustard seed, and you put it in a sack of a 25 kilo bag of mustard seeds, that is the extent of the totality of the Mahatattva, or the conglomeration of all the universes combined. Some universes are very small. Srila Prabhupada has stated that the universe that we're presently living in is a small universe because it's indicated by how many heads Lord Brahma has. So there are only four directions: north, south, east and west. But in other universes, Lord Brahma has hundreds of thousands of heads. Because in some gigantic universes, there are hundreds of thousands of directions. So these 8,400,000 species of life are scattered within the totality of the Mahatattva, with all these universes. So at some point, and Prabhupada emphasizes again and again and again, at some point, we get a human form of life, which is extremely, extremely rare to obtain. When Lord Chaitanya was speaking with Rupa Goswami in Dasavamedagat in Allahabad, they went to some quiet place down the river, the Ganga River, and they arrived at Dasavamedagat, and it was there that Lord Chaitanya instructed Rupa Goswami about the teachings of love of God. And he's describing that there is an ocean, and it is compared to the science of bhakti. And we cannot measure the length or the breadth of that ocean. It's impossible. So let me take a drop of that ocean and explain. So qualitatively, Lord Chaitanya is explaining that drop, because within that drop is pure bhakti. And Lord Chaitanya is saying to Rupa Goswami that there are two kinds of living entities in this world. They are the moving and the non-moving. So when you look at non-moving living entities, you're looking at trees. Prabhupada gives that example in the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. Trees, they are non-moving living entities. And then you have the moving living entities, which are aquatics. There are insects, there are mammals, there are animals. And as well as these moving living entities, there is the human being. But they are such a minority in terms of the other species of life. So then Lord Chaitanya expands the philosophy by actually saying to Rupa Goswami that most human beings that take birth as a human beings are not even considered human beings. They are human animals because their consciousness is not that of a human being. Just like one cannot be a Brahmin, a Kshatriya, a Vaishya, if he's not qualified to be that. He may take birth in a Vaishya family. He may take birth in a Brahmana family, but not necessarily have the qualifications to be a Brahmana, a Kshatriya, or a Vaishya. And similarly, it applies to the human form of life. We take birth in the human form. The soul enters into the human form. But if we do not cultivate and develop the consciousness to at least the level of a human being, then we can forget about it. We can forget about utilizing the human form of life to one's advantage, which is to develop one's love of God. We're not here to be academics, we're not here to be anything that is related to the body. Yes, we use the body. We have to have the body. This is what we walk around in. In the 18th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada describes the material body is just like a machine. And if you look at each other's body, we can see how well crafted each body is. And we can see by looking at one another's body that we're all uniquely individual. That is, not one person's body is the same as another person's body. It doesn't matter whether you're born as twins, triplets, quadruplets, born a few minutes after one another and coming out of the womb in short intervals within minutes of one another. You may have an extreme likeness, but you are always strictly individual. There will always be a resemblance of individuality within your body. And the reason for that is because we are uniquely individual souls. And the individual soul, the nature of the individual soul is of twofold. We have a nature, a very unique spiritual nature. And that is, number one, we desire. We can never ever stop desiring, because that's part of us. That's what we do. That's how we are created by Krishna, to desire eternally. And the other thing is, we're servants. The servitude. So you've got a mixture. Our personalities are mixtures of desires and servitude. We're servants. And that's what we do. We're the eternal servants who are desiring to please Krishna. That is our nature. That is the very core of who we are. So, having the desire, we sometimes, because we are very uniquely, minusculely, in a very obscure pattern, we have independence. It's not a huge independence, but we do have independence. Just when, as Krishna was coming to the end of his recitation of Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna, he didn't force Arjuna to accept what he was saying. He simply said to Arjuna, now you have heard this knowledge. Now you do what you want. You decide to fight or you don't fight. That is up to you. So, on coming to the human form of life, we have these desires. We are Anandamaya Biyasat. That is another feature to ourselves. We are always seeking pleasure. So we're desirous, we're servants, and because we're desirous, we seek pleasure. We cannot live without pleasure. We cannot live without being happy. It's our nature. It is the nature of the marginal energy. And Prabhupada describes this marginal energy as grains of sand at the beginning of where the ocean ends. Sometimes you see waves coming over those grains of sand, and sometimes those grains of sand dry out in the sun. So marginal energy can be engaged in Krishna's service, or it can be engaged in Maya's service. It just depends on the unique desires of the individual living entity. So when Srila Prabhupada came to the West, when he formulated this movement, he spent 6 whole years in Vrindavan making plans. And then eventually, Prabhupada decided to come to the Western world. And when he arrived in the Western world, he was thinking that when he starts to create the society that he's longing to create within the ashrams, he will simply have brahmacharis and sannyasis. That was his initial thought. But when he actually saw that in the Western world, the men and women were living in such close proximity, and there was no question of separating that proximity, Srila Prabhupada then decided, practically, because he was practical. Prabhupada was practical. The acharya is always practical. Even though they're extremely spiritual advanced, they still are earth. They have their 2 feet on the ground. Because ultimately the desire is to collect as many spirit souls as possible to take them back to home, back to Godhead. So Prabhupada, he came with old wine. Old wine is a representation of the Vedic scriptures. He came with that Vedic knowledge, but he put it in new bottles. He created new bottles. And the new bottles were that the name of the ladies that were coming to live in the ashram, in the temples of ISKCON worldwide, was called Brahmacharini. That name, Brahmacharini, was invented by Srila Prabhupada. You will not find that name in Vedic literature. You will find Brahmana, but not Brahmacharini. That is made by Srila Prabhupada. But the nature, we're talking about the body. So when I talk about the reality of women's bodies, don't become offended by it, because you're not that body. You're spirit soul. And similarly, in this age of Kali Yuga, I'm not letting the men get away with it either, because men also in this age of Kali Yuga don't act like men. They act like women a lot of the time. They don't have the strength. They don't have the intelligence. You go to the Western world and you see the way men act. I know. I deal with a lot of men day in and day out in my occupation. So, we're both in difficult positions, both the men and the women, because we're entrapped in these material bodies. And if you look at your body, if you look at the body, Prabhupada says it's actually a uniform. It's a prison uniform. Don't be proud of the body, because the body is a uniform. The material world is the prison house of the spiritual world. And we have come down into the prison house as a prisoner. And you may have seen in different countries, prison uniforms are depicted differently. Sometimes you'll see a prisoner with a uniform on with arrows. Have you ever seen that? Where prisoners have certain types of prison uniforms. Some prisons have hoops, black and white hoops. Some prisons have brown, very dull brown trousers and tops. So this is our prison uniform. The body. What is it? It's dead. It's dead matter. Krishna says it's inferior energy. So how wonderful Krishna is. He creates from the inferior energy a playhouse. The whole material world, the conglomeration of all the universes, the whole Mahatattva, is designed as a playroom, just like children. Children, maybe when their mothers and fathers are shopping, or when they have to go to work, they go to a play place. They go to a nursery to play. So this material world is like a nursery, because the living entity under the modes of material nature, under the influences of this inferior energy, it's just like a child. It's childish to think that you can enjoy without Krishna. It's very, very childish. It's silly. Just like we see the children, they're not at all responsible. They're not supposed to be because they're little kids. But little kids are silly. They do silly things. And they pretend. And then parents have to buy them toys because they act out all kinds of fantasies. And that's children. That's the nature of children. So when the living entity decides, oh, I'd really like to try to find if there's a better pleasure somewhere else rather than serving Krishna. That is the minute independence working. Let me just try and find somewhere where I can act out and see if I can be just as happy as I am now, or even happier. Maybe I want to be happy. Maybe I want to try and be much happier than my Sat Chitananda body, my spiritual body. I've heard many times devotees, disciples, asking, why is it, Srila Prabhupada, how come being in such an exalted position in the spiritual world, how is it that we're here now in this degraded situation? And Prabhupada said, it's not important to know because it's happened since it happened. Who knows? Time is regulated here in the material world, but in the spiritual world, it's eternal time. So we shouldn't get focused on why we've come here. The point is that we are here. And the point is that we've got knowledge from the pure devotees. Srila Prabhupada has come and he's translated all these books from the original Sanskrit into Hindi, into Bengali, into English, which is the universal language of this earth planet, English. I was telling a story last night, and it was a funny story because Prabhupada had a sense of humor. And actually, even though we have to be serious about our Krishna consciousness that we're executing here, we still can help having a sense of humor because it's also part of who we are. Krishna had an incredible sense of humor. And all the acharyas, they all have their sense of humor. We have sense of humor. Krishna, one of the things that he loved doing more than anything was cheating. Krishna loved to cheat. He's the biggest cheater. He's always being naughty. As a cowherd boy, he's always looking to think, how can we get the curd that Mother Yasoda has just made? How can we take the milk? And they would have monkeys with them, and they would act out like monkeys. And they'd be very naughty, and they would just take all the curds and the milk while Mother Yasoda and the gopis weren't looking. So that's being naughty. And I remember in the time that I was with Srila Prabhupada, I saw him being very naughty. I saw him having such sense of humor also. And one of the times was Srila Prabhupada was sitting in his room here in Vrindavan and surrounded by his disciples. It was in this very house here. And this Sanskrit scholar came in. And he was a very tall, very large, big sadhu, big beard. And he sat down, and Srila Prabhupada greeted him, Hare Krishna. And Srila Prabhupada started talking in Hindi to this man. And the person replied in Sanskrit. He would just talk in Sanskrit language. So then Prabhupada changed from Hindi to Bengali. Then Srila Prabhupada started talking to him in Bengali. And the disciples in the room were just observing. We weren't involved in the conversations because we couldn't understand them. And Prabhupada knew that. And I think Srila Prabhupada wanted us to be in the conversation. So what he did, this man just kept on persisting in talking in Sanskrit. He was very learned man to be able to talk fluent Sanskrit. But then Prabhupada decided to talk English. So he's gone from Hindi to Bengali to English. Now Prabhupada is speaking in English. Then what happened was is that this particular man, he kept on talking at length in Sanskrit just to show his prowess of being a Sanskrit scholar. So then Prabhupada decided to reply in English. And when Prabhupada replied in English, because he knew what was going to happen, the man was stunned because he couldn't understand English. He could understand Hindi and Bengali, but all of a sudden Prabhupada started talking in English. And that stopped him, because then he couldn't carry on the conversation in Sanskrit because he couldn't understand what Prabhupada was saying. And Prabhupada was enjoying this. He was making fun, in a sense, because he would sometimes look to his disciples and smile. So the man got so agitated with the fact that Prabhupada wouldn't speak anything but English, he finally got up and left. He just walked out of the room. And Srila Prabhupada said, "Yes, we also have Sanskrit. All these slokas that I translated are originally in Sanskrit. But they're translated into English and other languages of the world because we are a preaching mission. What is the use of Sanskrit? People don't understand Sanskrit. It is the original language of the spiritual world. But we've forgotten that. We don't understand what Sanskrit is." So Prabhupada laughed because that caught him out. He says, how could he ever go to the West to preach or to share his knowledge, his learnings, because he's always speaking in Sanskrit? So Prabhupada caught him out by speaking in English. Srila Prabhupada also, he liked kachoris. It's one of his favorite things. And not many devotees could make kachoris like Prabhupada liked them, because Prabhupada was used to eating Radharani's kachoris in the spiritual world. Radharani's kachoris are very, very special, because every time you eat a kachori, you eat one kachori, and it is pure spiritual energy. It is the internal, it is the divine prakritim. It is the variegatedness of that divine prakritim. So a second time, when you take another kachori, now what happens in the material world, if you eat another kachori, it's similar to the one that you've eaten previously, before that one. But in the spiritual world, the taste increases. It's ever-increasing taste. So you take a third, a fourth, a fifth, a sixth. It just goes on, tasting better and better and better. That is the nature of Daivim Prakritim. That is the spiritual energy. It's ever expansive. It's ananda. It is bliss. So that's what we've compromised in this material world. By coming here, we've compromised our original constitutional position. So if we're not serving Krishna in our constitutional position, in love and devotion, we will not experience the byproducts of that. The byproducts is that we are eternal. And we're full of knowledge. We're all knowledgeable. Yashmin vignate savam, ivam vignatam bhavanti. That when the cause of all causes becomes known, then everything knowable becomes known, and nothing remains unknown. That is the nature of Daivim Prakritim. So, we also have this ananda, this bliss. So we compromise that. And what do we get? We get a material body. We get a prison uniform. So what do we get out of that? Depression. We get nothing tastes nice. It's all limited energy. Krishna says it's my inferior energy. So we become unhappy. And because we forget, because we've been here so long now, we can't remember what it's like to be natural anymore. This is not natural. This is totally unnatural. So, we have this process. Lord Chaitanya is so kind. He has come through the grace of Sri Advaita Prabhu. Sri Advaita Prabhu is already here. And that is the nature of how Krishna comes. Lord Chaitanya comes. Leela Advatars come. When Krishna was here, when Govinda came, the original form of Godhead arrived on this planet Earth 5,000 years ago. Within his very being, all the other four major expansions were present in his body. Vasudev, Shankarshan, Prajumna, Aniruddha, all the Leela Advatars, all Manvantara Advatars, they were all present in the Godhead. That's why we say International Society for Krishna Consciousness. We say Godhead. We use that word Godhead. I used to wonder when I first became a devotee, what does Godhead mean? Why not God, just God? But Godhead is the person, Bhagavan, when he comes. He possesses within his form all other forms. All other forms. He is Advaitam, Achyutam, Anadim, Anantarupam, Adyam, Purana, Purusham, Nava, Yovanam, Cha. Vedesi, Dulabam, Adulabam, Atma, Bhakto, Govindam, Aripusham, Tamaham, Bhajami. He's Advaitam. It means that he's non-dual. We are dual. We are Advaita, not Advaita. Dvaita means that we have a material body around our spirit, so there's two energies combined. But Krishna is Advaita, Achyutam. Achyutam means he never falls down. It's impossible, because they're his energies that he's employing. He is the source of those energies. So he never falls down, but we fall down, because we're minuscule. We're marginal energy. We're very, very tiny. So when we look at one another, we have to look with Shastra Chakshush. We have to have the eye of the Shastra. We have to be in knowledge. We can't just be sentimental. Prabhupada said it is important. Not only do we chant our japa, but we have to read Srila Prabhupada's books to be more sharp. It's like a pencil. You have to be sharp for the spiritual master. You have to sharpen yourself up. And that's by reading. And together with your practice, with your sadhana, along with the reading of the books, it becomes a unique combination, a very powerful combination, where we can preach. Look at Prabhupada single-handedly. You know, the proof is in the eating. Prabhupada was always the acharya for every single thing that he did. Even when Prabhupada left his body, he was teaching us how to leave the body. And Prabhupada, what was the formula? And this is the irony of it. Prabhupada says, I just repeat the instructions of my spiritual master. We don't even have to think about it. We just repeat what we hear. What we read in the books, we repeat it. We become the ideal postman. Srila Prabhupada said, simple for the simple, complicated for the complicated. This Krishna consciousness formula for Kali Yuga, and we have Maharaj Ambarish as the perfect example of engaging in the nine processes of devotional service. He was so absorbed. Maharaj Ambarish, he was a king. He was the king of the whole world. But he slowly gave up that kingdom because he was involved, engaged in the nine processes of devotional service. And Srila Prabhupada says, you don't have to be engaged in the nine. Not even eight, seven, six, five, four, three, two. Just one is enough. Just one process is enough for you to be absorbed in, for you to go back to home, back to Godhead. So, let's just return to the purport. Let's return to the translation. It's describing about the position of a woman. When Srila Prabhupada started ISKCON, I remember in Hyderabad, there was this young girl. She couldn't have been more than 19 years old. Young Indian girl. And she joined the temple in Hyderabad. We just opened it. We were having a festival for the opening. And she came, and she was there for 3 or 4 days. And after the third or fourth day, her sari caught a light. She had a polyester cotton sari on. And it caught a light. And polyester, it's like, the fuel is very strong. As soon as it caught a light, it just went up in flames. There was no question of that young lady surviving. And she burned to death in the temple. Wasn't necessarily in the temple room, but it was in the temple complex. And we were all distraught. Because, I don't know, have you ever seen anyone dying in that condition? Being in all that fire and the screams, the emotion that girl was going through. We tried and tried and tried our best to put those flames out, but we couldn't save her. So for days we were perplexed and distressed. We went to Prabhupada and we said, Prabhupada, she has only just come. And there's a tendency sometimes we look at one another and we look at the status of one another, which is wrong. We shouldn't be looking at status based on the body. We should be thinking of the soul within the body, because that's our real nature. So sometimes, because we're so bothered with status, we think, won't give her a second look. She's just been here for a few days and I'm very happy that she's come, but she's just a young neophyte devotee. And that mentality exists in this movement. And it should be taken away. And that's why I'm taking advantage to describe to you and share with you this particular experience. So we went to Prabhupada and we were all distressed. And Prabhupada said to us, we said to Prabhupada, what happened to that young girl, Prabhupada? She was a devotee. She came to serve in the temple. And he thought for about 20 seconds. He was silent and he opened his eyes and he said, she has gone back to Godhead. So we don't know who's who. We're so enamored and sidetracked by bodies. We don't know who we're sitting next to. We have no idea. So how important in this human form of life it is to utilize our time, because time is ticking. Prabhupada says you cannot buy. Even the most powerful man, he may have the most riches and money, but he can never, even if he spends many crores of rupees, hundreds of crores of rupees, he can never buy a second of time that has passed. And Prabhupada says that's why the human form of life is so important. And it's so important, the human form of life, that we're constantly being kicked. The animals, they don't suffer karma because they go automatically through the species of life because they act like animals. Animals don't suffer karma. It's only the human being that suffers karma, because the actions that we perform have to be the right actions for a human being. And the right actions for a human being is to engage in Krishna consciousness. And if you don't engage in Krishna consciousness, then you will get a reaction. And that is called the law of karma. When you try to perform actions that are separate from the actions of Krishna consciousness. So there's a sloka. Bhukti mukti siddhi kami sakale ashanta. The bhukti, the sense enjoyer, he is ashanta, he is not peaceful. The mukti, he is a liberationist. He is also not happy, because at the end of his deliberation as a jnani, what he wants to do, his form of liberation, is to merge into the Brahma Jyoti, into the effulgence of Krishna. So there's the bhukti, the sense enjoyer, the mukti, the jnani, and then you've got the yogi. Bhukti, mukti, siddhi. Yogis develop siddhis, powers. Jesus Christ was a siddhi. He went, actually, there is so much more about Jesus Christ than people know. Where does he get his powers from? How can he walk on water and cure the sick and do all that? Because he was a siddhi. He had mystic power. And that was given to him in India by his austerities of living there. So bhukti, mukti, siddhi, kami, they're all kamis, they're non-devotees. Bhukti, mukti, siddhi, kami, sakale, always ashanta, never peaceful. And Krishna bhakta, naishkama, atta eva shanta. The Krishna bhakta, he is performing naishkama. Naishkama means work in devotion that has no reaction. And that reaction is burning up all the previous bad actions that were performed before. Because around the heart of every living entity are many sinful seeds. Many seeds that haven't fructified into reactive karma. They're waiting for the time to fructify. So before they do fructify, we burn them away by chanting Hare Krishna. And that is the process. Blessed are the pure in heart. So we have to purify the heart, and that is the business of the Vaishnav. The more we purify the heart, we will see Krishna. It's explained in Bhagavad Gita. When the mind, who is the real enemy of the conditioned soul, when the mind is conquered, when it's tamed by the chanting of Hare Krishna, the super soul is reached. Super soul becomes visible to our very eyes. Just like I'm seeing all you and you're seeing me, you will see Krishna just like that. But it takes time. You've got to be patient. Krishna needs to see the quality. So, and then let's take another woman, because we're talking about women in this particular translation. What about Yamuna? Yamuna Devi Dasi. She was very recently, there's samadhi there. And while she was alive, she was constantly serving Prabhupada. Constantly. She was one of the most wonderful cooks. One time Srila Prabhupada said, and this is mentioned in Shruti Kirti's book, What is the Difficulty? It's a very funny story. Shruti Kirti would cook for Prabhupada. And Prabhupada would eat pretty much everything that was put in front of him. Because whoever was the servant would cook the basic fundamental meal in the cooker, in the tiffin. And Srila Prabhupada, when he came to Vrindavan, he was staying at his Radha Damodar rooms. And Yamuna was cooking for him in the kitchen, and he said to Shruti Kirti, I want you to come today and eat and have lunch with me. I want you to eat with me. Yamuna is going to cook for you today. And he said, Yamuna, she is a Vedic cook. And you make American prasadam. like that. He said, you do not know how to cook Vedically. You know very well American style. So he says, I want you to taste Yamuna's cooking. And she made this wonderful lunch for Srila Prabhupada. And then she Prabhupada said to Yamuna, now you give him a plate of prasadam. And he was eating it. And he could see, yes, this is real prasadam. No, like that. And then, so that was just one thing. And then Yamuna, she's made this incredible cookbook that is being distributed all over the world for the benefit of people that want to make prasadam. And then she made that soundtrack with George Harrison in the early days. Govindam Adipusham. And that's, Prabhupada decided that that would be the soundtrack that would greet the deities in every single temple in ISKCON. So there are pluses. Don't think that because you've got a woman's body that you're not able to be yourself. You know, you just transfer your consciousness to the person within, which is you. There's no harm. You know, you're a human being, but you're a different human being. You're a female human being. And also, male human beings shouldn't be proud that they're male human beings, because a lot of the time, we, as I've said before in the lecture, we're not acting like males. So ultimately, we've got to transfer our consciousness from the female, from the male, into the spiritual realm. And that's what the human form of life is all about. Human being means to act like a spirit soul. Human form of life, the responsibility of every human being is to learn how to act like a spirit soul. Prabhupada said it is a preparatory situation, having a human form. It enables us to prepare ourselves while we're in this world, ready for the spiritual world. And Prabhupada said that when you leave your body in full Krishna consciousness, it's like a moment. Just like when you wake up in the morning, you're dreaming, right? And you wake up and all of a sudden your dream is over and you're back to where you are. Realistically, you're back in your room, in your bedroom. So Prabhupada says, when you're transferred back to the spiritual world, instantaneously you click into your swarup. And when we all get hung up about family, families are the most important thing in the world. In this life, family is most important. The uncles, the aunties, the mothers, the grandmothers, and children. And at the end of the day, what about our original families? We had family this life. We had family last life, a completely different family. And we had a different family the lifetime before. But there is a family where we actually belong eternally. And in the spiritual world, Prabhupada says, everything that happens here, like family life, it's all there. It's not like as if there's no families. There's loads and unlimited amounts of families. And we all belong in somewhere there, but with Krishna in the center. So as soon as we somehow or other learn how to detach ourselves from all these mundane relationships, when we actually do go back home, back to Godhead, we'll be truly situated where we really belong. And I didn't realize it was 9:15. Why didn't you tell me? Are you going to tell me it's 9:15? Oh, okay.
You made a nice point about how we men are not acting like men. What does it really mean to act like a man in Krishna consciousness?
That's exactly right. When I say man, I have to refer to man, the word man, because we are in male bodies, right? Ultimately, we're all spirit souls, but we have to also talk in a language that's practical for us, so we can communicate properly and practically. So, Vaishnav men have to act like Vaishnav men. They have to be knowledgeable, they have to be responsible, they have to be clean, they have to be performing tapasya, they have to sacrifice. And what I mean by sacrifice is sacrificing slowly but surely all the material desires. And then we can look at our wives or and be the example. If we're not setting an example, then how can we expect someone else to act? It's not fair. Oh, you are my wife. I want you to chant 16 rounds, follow the four regulative principles. I want you to cook for me, wash all my clothes. I want you to do this, that, boom, boom, boom. And I am just going to sit back and enjoy. It doesn't work like that. It's not fair. We all have our swadham. We all have our duties within this world. And we should perform them in unison. Grihastha life means that you work as a team. And even in vanaprastha life, I've been a vanaprastha for 10 years. And I have a wonderful relationship with my wife as we're getting older. Because she is very, very Krishna conscious. And the work that we do back in Australia is wonderful. But eventually time will come when we have to move even further on. So whether you're a brahmacharis too, you can't be lazy, sleep, eating and sleeping, going over there as soon as the class is over and eating 6-7 chapatis and lots of khichdi and all this, and then feeling really full and sleepy. And I've been up since 4 o'clock this morning. I deserve to go to sleep. So I go off to my little room and go to sleep. You rest when your body needs to be replenished. You rest, but don't just act like this eating and sleeping business. Prabhupada was very, very annoyed at that kind of activity. So, you know, it's all about enlivening one another, regardless of the ashram that we're living in, that's all. Is there any other questions? Yes. You always have lots of questions. He's a very good inquirer, this person. Yeah. Aren't you?
There is one popular opinion that at first one should become human, and he should act like a human. One should have qualities, human qualities, and then after that one can become Krishna consciousness human. What do you think about that opinion?
Well, to be honest, I didn't have a lot of human qualities when I joined the movement. I was a very fallen person. I was doing a lot of nonsense. And we won't go into those details, it's not necessary. But to answer your question, it's not that you have to become a perfect human being before you can become Krishna conscious. And that's what sadhana is all about. You come to Krishna consciousness in any way you can. If we observe within each and every person or devotee's lived experience day to day, I'm sure you've seen in your own experience, when people want to join the temple, you're out doing sankirtan. You're out doing sankirtan or book distribution. So many people come sometimes to the temple to take prasadam, right? And that's the secret weapon. It's prasadam, the tongue. Sevan mukhehi jivado. So by eating prasadam and chanting, we very quickly cleanse ourselves of all those bad habits. So it's not like as if we have to go through a real regulation, a real regulatory process to first become perfect. It's a means to an end. Bhakti yoga, Krishna consciousness, is a means and the end. You understand?
Animals don't make any karma, but what about the animals which are sent to slaughterhouse and they are cut regularly, so whether they have bad karma or is the human is making bad karma?
Right. What did you say in your first part of the question?
Animals don't make karma.
Right.
So what about those animals which are being sent to slaughterhouse or every day
right.
we
so
see...
So are you referring to the person that's killing the animals?
Yeah.
Well, of course. That's abominable. And what happens if a human being kills another human being or kills an animal? They have to take birth, and that very animal they kill will take a human birth and kill them. That's the law of karma. That's why it's so important that you don't consider killing. Because when you kill someone, you take birth as the very species of life that you've killed, and that particular species of life takes a human form to kill you.
So that means those animals which are going to the slaughterhouse, they have been killing those humans in the previous life, something like that?
Possibly, but we don't get into the mathematics.
Okay.
Because sometimes there's a lot of inquiries and we get really, Prabhupada sometimes, when people would ask questions, he would say, I don't want to answer that question because it doesn't help you to advance in Krishna consciousness. It's like a mathematical question. It's like an equation of life, and it's not important. The idea is that we shouldn't kill because there is a reaction to it. And the super soul in the heart, he is the supreme accountant. He knows exactly what reaction you're going to get, and he organizes the reaction, the super soul. Okay? Super soul, because that's why it's important. The living entity, like I said before, desires. And desires can be building blocks for the next life. Desires are like the building of the next body. So we don't realize it because we go about our day-to-day activity. But if you could just stop yourself and slow yourself down and think, as I'm starting to desire, because it's one desire after another. We're going here, there, I want to do this, I want to eat, I want to talk with this person. Constantly desiring to do something. So those desires, Krishna takes into consideration every single desire because they're building the next body. So, if you're desiring all the time to do devotional service, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu, Smarapada Sevanam, Acharam, Vandanam, Dasham, Sakya, Atma, Navedanam. If your desires are within those nine processes of devotional service, you are creating, they are building blocks, they are desires, building blocks for a spiritual body. And if you don't desire that kind of activity, then you're building a body that's going to keep you again in this material world.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
I met many times that in Shastras, in different temples, you know, that if you do some auspicious action, then 10 generations or 7 generations or something will be released and to go to spiritual world. But I don't understand the meaning because it looks like we don't have what generations, we don't have pretty much common with these people, even though it is illusion, as you said. Hmm. So can you a bit explain this point?
Yeah. First of all, auspicious activities are spiritual activities. Auspicious activities are devotional activities. So if we are performing auspicious, spiritual, devotional activities, then 10, I hear it was more than 10, I think it's 100 generations, past and present, will be benefited from your contribution of performing spiritual activity. they will also go back to Godhead. And that's why it's important. You can't imagine the strength of devotional service, because that is stated in Shastra. All right?
So it is kind of preaching.
Mm-hmm.
So it looks like it is a kind of preaching. Preaching. I mean, we are helping others. Because I don't
care. Well, it's mercy. It's kripa. It's mercy. Okay. Because they don't know, because they're not here. They're in some other bodies. God knows where. Who knows? But because there's been connection through family, through a line of family, and you become a pure Vaishnav, they will benefit. And that's what the Shastra says. So the idea is, we don't think too much. You know, what we should try to do, by chanting and purifying our heart, when we read Shastra, it becomes common sense to us. It becomes obvious to us. If we're trying to read Shastra in an academic way, then we have all these questions about the mathematics of it. And it's not important. You keep simple, you purify your heart. Like I said, Yashmin Vignate Savam Ivam Vignatam Bhavanti. That when the cause of all causes becomes known by bhakti, everything knowable becomes known and nothing remains unknown anymore. You know everything. And that's just simply through the process of Krishna consciousness, bhakti yoga. So we'll just have just this one question and then we'll finish.
Just one small comment. That Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that if you leave your body as a Kanishtha Adhikari, three generations will benefit. As a Mahajan 14 and as a pure devotee 100.
Well, be a pure devotee. That's it.
What question? Okay.
I was referring to being a pure devotee. Pure Vaishnav is a pure devotee. All right. So that's it. Thank you very much for hearing. Hare Krishna. Jai Hari Bol.